This is a production of Cornell University.
Essay meeting, March 5th, 2007.
Congratulations to you guys. I know it was a long road for you to get to these great collections. My question is, where is the leak? How come the Daily Sun knew about it before we did?
Questions or comments? Well, thank you, Liz, and Representative Beavis.
Do you have any plans for next year in order to present this? Like, I'm sorry.
It's extremely hard to kind of control it no matter what you do. There's always kind of a possibility there. Even something really highly guarded will usually get out. So, I mean, we try our best for our applications for the executive board, which are due today. People will be signing a confidentiality agreement. So, that's what we're trying to leak to a minimum.
Representative Ehrlich.
I just want to say that I think both reports are fantastic, and thank you very much, and I'm really excited.
Thanks, SDPD. That's great news, and I'll see you on the slope.
Thank you.
Audience.
Next, we have a convocation committee announcement.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Eddie Gump, Senior Class President of 2007.
Hi, I'm Jean Gavin, I'm 2007 Convocation Chair. So, as most students already know, what the deal is on today, our Convocation Speaker is Soledad O'Brien, and we're really excited about having her on campus. Television
Okay, on to an SA internal elections reminder. April 9th, we'll be having the internal elections for next year's SA e-board, and then April 16th, I believe, we'll be having the internal elections for next year's chairs of committees, et cetera. I'm not sure what the location is. Nitin should send out an email to all of you. Next, there's a reminder about the forum with President Scorton this evening. It's at 7 p.m. in Malott Hall-based auditorium. That should be exciting. I think I sent an email out to everyone here. And there's also a Facebook group you can join if you're into that sort of thing. Before we get to the spring break bus program review with Representative Hartman, I want to invite Tracy Matrano up to give us an update on the RIAA and file sharing in the university.
Thank you, Kwame, and thanks for having me back again. I should have called in to go to the library. Mostly, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have about this subject, but I have to say a few introductory remarks. So far, no one else has not received any settlement letters. We have received some preservation notices. Sometimes those notices are the precursor to a settlement letter.
Could you explain? I'm not sure if everyone here knows the difference between settlement letters and preservation notices.
Right. The preservation notice has the ISD, which is Presidential Network, are on. And it asks the ISD to pull the contact information as well as the log information in order for the ISD not to destroy the record at the time that it has been sent subsequent for the contact. In the case of the highly publicized settlement letters, these letters are letters that really are sent to ISD, the academic campus ISD, not commercial ISD, so please don't give any attention to the RIAA coming target, but to Cornerstone Education is the focus for reading by the CIA. But these letters ask the institutional ISD to forward the message to the user, all that the content owner knows is the IP address that they allege is infringing on copyright, and they know that because they reverse file share selected information in an IP address is sort of like a phone number so far because it's in a certain area code, and you know 647 the end of the area. 123.253.x is for the Cornell Internet Protocol space. So they send that to us and they ask us to forward out a letter to the user. And the user then gets a letter detailing the material alleged to have violated copyright by the content owner and sort of calculates up what that would incur in terms of statutory cost of copyright infringement. Copyright infringement is actually very, very expensive, which is why sometimes I'm curious about the language they use when they say stealing and theft. It actually has a much greater liability than stealing and theft, both criminally and civilly, certainly civilly. And some of these costs could be extraordinarily high, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And they suggest that if you contact them by going to a certain website, that you can settle the case for much less than the amount they allege has been infringed. And the Chronicle of Higher Education has noted a few ago that on average, to the students who have responded, they have been collecting on average about $4,000, which they say is an infinitesimal amount compared to the amount that actually would be collectible for a case to go to court. The situation that these letters put the campus ISD in is the consequences the student would have if they don't go to this website, which is the threat of school legal action, at which point they would suggest that you know the hundreds of thousands of dollars that are alleged to have been violated. For Cornell, it was a difficult decision policy to forward these letters, were we to receive them. It's not a difficult decision because as a matter of policy, we already act on DMCA notices, which are students and school notices that we also get from content owners. And after getting from the DMCA passed in 1998, we act on them as an internal matter. We never reveal the identity of the user to the content owner unless served with an appropriate subpoena. In my experience here since 2001, this only happened one time. Consequently, we act on them, and right now there's a referral to the JA. very much to MJA delegate their disciplinary authority to a popular education program that will be run by the IT Conference Guard. And work a little bit like this kind of driving class and things like that. But at any rate, the main reason I think by coming suggesting that I come here is to explain the difference between the education notice, which just asks us to keep the contact information. If you've been reading about this, you may know that some schools receive settlement letters and have to return them to the RIA so they don't have the forwarding log information to send to you. So the preservation notice is like, at that moment, you should keep the contact information. And should you receive the settlement letter, you will then have it available to you to send forward in the event that you destroy the log in the interim. The DMCA notices, which we've always been familiar and continue to act on, and the settlement letter, which would then be up to you to question. And when I say you can understand, I mean the user, the person who sees you. Leave up to the user the responsibility of deciding whether or not they want to contact the content on the website and follow that procedure, or if they wanted to get legal counsel and try to address the matter. So why don't I just leave that basic information there and be happy to take any questions that you may have.
Representative Basil.
When we came back in the fall, you mentioned that C++, the internal five-train network, was from the stance of it being able to be prosecuted. They are not still legal for the court industry to prosecute extraction of C++, correct?
Completely incorrect. In C++, what I understand, what I have been told by the previous constituents, is an intranet file share service program. I shouldn't say service at all. It's a file share program and that's the software upon which I enter the other business from the internet. And it is completely illegal if that material you kind of have the copyright to or permission from the copy right holder to distribute or either to download or not distribute. So it is copyright material you don't have permission or own, it's illegal, period.
Well, there's my understanding from the fall meeting that since it's intranet, that is you're saying that the court industry can perform LimeWire, they can police LimeWire and transfer from you using C++ and intranet if they are unable to actually go on the network and themselves. But I recall from the fall that was there someone that was leaving you?
Well, I'll tell you what I know. I'm rather trying to reconstruct the conversation. They don't release it in a sense that they're not law enforcement. They are a private owner trying to enforce their copy rights. And the way they do it is to hire agencies of people who reverse file share. So it's not monitoring the network in any illegal way, which would violate the Electronic Communication Privacy Act. It's not policing in the sense that they are law enforcement, although you should know that copyright is both civil and criminal action. So it is possible that they could turn over information, and they can in the case of very large amounts of material that is being infringed, turned it over to the Department of Justice, and there have been people arrested in these cases for a very, very large amount of material. Be that as it may, technologically, if DC++ operates in a way that computer science students have described it to me, it is running only on the internet. At this time, they do not appear, content owners do not appear to have access to them. But I can tell you that they have been and have successfully gained access to what were previously private networks in the past, which is Internet 2, which is the high-speed network that connects a lot of higher education. At one time, there was a program I can't remember offhand, but the name of it was right. No, that ran precisely on the Internet 2 network for file sharing. Somehow they gained access to it, and they sort of broke this, best kept, hope secret about file sharing on that network. And so I say this with great caution because if today they don't have access to it, it is neither a promise that they won't have any for tomorrow, nor, and I really want to be very, very clear about this, unfortunately, lots of students seem to be misled by, I don't know how to say it more clearly, it's being publicized by a newspaper or whatever, D, the material on DC++ is not, as a rule, legal. Unless you own it, unless you have permission to use it, unless it is in the public domain.
Can you approach the microphone because we recorded the meeting and state your name here, please?
Zachary 1109. We don't know the version of when they do have access.
I'm in the very newsworthy. More than a year or so ago, they sent letters to all universities, to many university presidents, including President Holland, trying to get the presidents to be aware that these kinds of systems in Barnett file share systems were running on campus. So it's not as if they don't know they're there. They told them they're there. They have been the subject of some of the Senate hearings, which they have created in college, university educators, will do that, which is enough about copyright infringement. It will be a newsworthy thing. Am I responsible in my office to send out a notice to all of you so that you don't go to jail? I haven't necessarily said that. I certainly did in the spring of, I think it was 2005, let you know that that letter had gone to President Rawlings to let you know that they were aware of the Internet File Share Service. And once aware, given the history we have of how they have penetrated other private networks, it certainly could make me think again about not knowing when and if such a penetration, if you will be made into the internet. But I can't say that the universities would be served in the way of sort of giving them the heads up. We would certainly keep you apprised of anything that is appropriate to share with you. It, and it's not as if we would hide the information. Why is that not the information in 2005? That they were there.
When do you have to leave?
I'm full for a while.
Okay. Problems during that period? Okay. Problems during that period.
Tracy, thank you for coming to speak to us again. Just two quick questions. I wanted to ask you soon that next year is a student at DC Center, and this is the first year that we've had, since we haven't had, which is legal masters, which is legal music show program, not music show, but music software program on campus. Has there been a significant increase this year from the past years in the number of prosecutions and sort of violations that the RAA or any other similar type of organization has notified your office of the university of compared to the past 2 years?
It is very true that we have had an exponential rise in the number of notices this year. It may or may not be related to the fact that we no longer have a music program. And the reason I say that is because the company has been sending out an exponential number of notices to everybody.
Okay. Yeah, that would be my second question. If they sort of look away a little bit, if there's some sort of service like that provided on the campus in an effort to sort of curb these sort of illegal sharing, but I guess you're saying it's across the board in Toronto. Is that correct?
When we had it, I would say that there was a suspicion that we were getting legal notices because we had been one of the first campuses to try illegal business programs. But yeah, it never has been changed for a firm. But I mean, for the Chinese district, we have to be one of the first campuses to also be in this area. Not only all bets are off in the industry. Any agreements that they may have tried to reach to the joint They had long content owners wanted us to monitor our networks for content or completely close the ports upon which home file share programs strongly more interested in the future. Cornell University, of course, has constituently refused to do so, mostly because it's not part of our mission to close down networks.
Last question, this is just really, really quickly. I'm curious, knowing that if, hypothetically speaking, if a legal research program were to become part of the student activity fee, or would be considered to be part of the student activity fee, because it would be sort of new to that activity fee, there would be approximately, I think, between 1,000 and 1,500 signatures required to have that even considered as part of the fee. I'm just assuming that the university would have nothing to do with providing that. It would be basically on the students to do that on their own. Is that correct?
I'll try to let you know the person because there would probably be representatives from Vice President Student Academic Services and representatives from Vice President of Information Technology. I do know that the information technology spends considerable amount of their own money along with the donor system. We were the ones who actually paid for the server.
I was just going to, sorry, I'm the vice president of finance. I was just going to clarify that if you did want to apply for byline funding, it would be helpful to have like a student liaison or something like that, because you would then, you know, need to collect all of those signatures and stuff like that. But anything is feasible under byline funding.
Great.
Because I won't be here to take care of it.
Are there any other questions or comments? All right, thanks so much for coming in to speak to us about this. All right, next we have a spring break bus program review with Representative Hartman.
Okay, I'll try to make this go as quickly as possible just to give a lot of information. I just want to review what happened and kind of get discussed what's going to come in the future. Okay, for Friday on the spring break bus program on March 16th, that's when actually the northeastern storm came across the country. So students did get to Syracuse Airport, but the main problem was a lot of these planes were canceled that day, which is something we didn't expect for students getting to the airport. So we actually did have a service at 4 p.m. for students to come back to Cornell.
Wow.
That was something I organized on the spot, and I actually called Syracuse Airport, and there was a PA announcement on the airport there. So that service was available, but there was no, if their planes were canceled, there was, besides that, there was no transportation back to Cornell, and there was no, like, other transportation throughout the week for them to get there. This is something we couldn't have predicted, and even if you would have used Ithaca Airline Limousine, they would have most likely charged you to go both ways and charge you the next day, too. Secondly, for the Sunday, for students coming back to Cornell, the bus drivers, some allowed students that did not have tickets onto the bus, mainly because of, like, maybe two or three. They felt kind of pity that the students were there with their bags and they wanted on the bus. So that kind of, they free ride it. I'll use that term now. They free ride it on the other students, but also it didn't hurt on the other students that paid and used the service. But overall, the service went very well. I'm not aware of the budget, but we did break even and we made a little profit from the service, which will just roll over into the service next year, which I'm going to explain. My main thing I want to do is ensure the longevity of the system. And over the next 2 weeks, I'm going to be meeting most likely with Dean Hubble and Susan Murphy and kind of discuss where we should go from here. And where I think what's looking at is we can either, as a student assembly, make it into a more student assembly oriented, into like a review committee, like the SAFC, or we can make it into an organization like SLOSIG, which we did in 2003, and it's under like the Student Activities Office, where we would just have that organization. But either way, I think we need some sort of an advisor for this organization. which we get as a review committee, or as if we make it an organization under Student Activities Office, mainly because this is something that I feel needs to occur every year, and the student assembly members will, some will get elected and some will get not get elected, and if the student assembly, if everyone in the assembly changed overnight and we got a whole new assembly, no one on the assembly would know how to do it, and we need someone, at least permanent, each assembly that would know the system. And something we need to look at is the problem when we were creating the system was like the capital money, or at least money that is there that we can access for like risk factors of putting the system forward. But those are the really two things. The expansion, which we'll discuss next year. We don't really have, but really the longevity of how we're going to create the committee, which I'll be working over the next 2 weeks to do. So if you guys have any questions, you can ask me now or just ask me.
Vice President Slickman.
In terms of the bus program that was recently executed this past spring break, is it possible for individuals who might have missed their bus because of flight delays or whatnot to get a refund or partial refund, seeing that we did turn a profit?
One of the main things was on the tickets. We said explicitly to everyone on the tickets and Binance that there was no like refunds. And as part of the, like, if they, their flight was delayed, then they, on Sunday, they could catch the bus again. So everyone could have caught the bus on Sunday. The problem is on Friday, I don't know who got their flight canceled or not, because it's just all arbitrary. And you're getting into a system of, like, who's going to be honest? Like, I don't know who to give the money to be honest. Like, I can't.
Representative Ronnie.
How much did you say that the parents are doing coming to
They're $45 or $50 one way.
And they were like on call, or did they have like set time?
I believe it's an airline limousine. I believe it's an airline limousine. Usually requires a 2-day notice, but I think that was on their website. But they might make exceptions. I don't know their policy. I don't.
Do they operate only with things that are...
It's a good airline limousine. It's a good airline limousine. It's a local company that transports people to and from Syracuse. And they might do other, like, chartered systems where you could purchase a bus or steel trip or something.
And how much do you think...
Taxi is there to be like $100.
More.
Yeah. Maybe even more.
All right. Thank you, Vince, for that report. And we look forward to hearing a little bit more about that as we close out the year. Okay, on to business of the day. First, we have the Slope Day Programming Board presentation. Another one. All right, so thanks.
Money machine, which is where you stand in, and then the money for forward and have some tickets inside.
like fly around when you grab at it. And then we're having a ladder plunge. It's inflatable, but it's like a ladder that's parallel to the ground, and then it would kind of have to be suspended. G-ball, a pitcher, which we had last year, similar to a dunk tank, but a water balloon falls on you. The high striker, and then we are doing some games ourselves, a cupcake wheel, and the soda ring house, which we had last year. And for food, we are having smoothies, cotton candy, and then the Cornell Dairy ice cream, which this year is vanilla ice cream with a Coca-Cola swirl and Pop Rocks. So the prizes? This year we're doing something special with a prize. We are going to be doing a raffle contest between 12 and 1:15, where if you come and participate in certain games, you get a raffle ticket, and you go in a drawing, which will be done at 1:30 for a super awesome prize to be
announced. By the other side.
Should have worked with fun.
So I guess some other stuff that is going on during Float Fest. We have stroll competition, which is put on by the Engineering Fraternity, which is kind of a band set type show. It's really fun each year, so definitely encourage everyone to come to that. Also, class of 2010 is putting on this Cornell Idol competition, kind of like, just like American Idol. And the winner of that will be performing on the Float Fest stage, which is on the plaza at 1:40, and the Fest Temple giveaway will also happen. So this year again, if you have guests, donate tickets, and those tickets will sale April 18th at 8 p.m. at 8 a.m. And another thing that we're doing differently this year is that the Float Fest Giving Report is purchasing some food tickets from Cornell Dining, which we will be selling online as a pre-sale to kind of alleviate the line on Float Day for food tickets. We've gotten feedback in the past, so we're kind of doing that to help things out. And the other exciting thing, I guess, about Float Day this year is that Cornell Dining has really done an amazing job in expanding the menu in the past year. We've gotten also feedback that people want more than just, you know, hot dogs and hamburgers. So this year they're doing pizza and Philly cheesesteaks, fajitas, whole pork sandwiches, the whole line of kosher and veggie selection, turkey drumsticks. It's going to be really cool. So those are some updates about Float Day.
Okay, questions or comments? Vice President Woodward.
When students enter the slope, will their ID card be swiped, or is it merely a visible thing? Because we have alumni who have ID cards, or students who are not registered but maybe on campus. Are the ID cards swiped, or are they just viewed?
As of this point, we don't have a lot of ID scanners to do that. It might be something that will be happening. Their IDs will be checked at the gate. You need to have a current Cornell ID to be admitted, or a guest pass. And if you have a guest pass, you have to have a government-issued ID saying that you're 18 years or older. You also need to be a student. Alumni can purchase alumni tickets, which are $25, and on our website.
And don't you also have a system, I think I remember this at one of the committee meetings, that when a student comes to get a beer wristband, you're able to check the ID and see if it corresponds with the record at Cornell. So I guess that at those locations you do swipe.
Yeah, the beer can all I guess are swipe. So if you got in as a Cornell student, your ID and the ballot will be checked out if you check it.
Representative Santana.
Hi. You mentioned that the guest tickets for alumni are 25, but how much are the ones for the regular tickets?
They're 25, I guess, I think it's last year.
Representative Robin.
How handicap accessible would you say these events are?
We're actually developing an accessibility plan, and I'll be meeting the person to do that next week. But anyone who needs any sort of special needs, they can contact us at Float Day at Cornell.edu, and we'll make arrangements for them.
And also, you mentioned for Cornell, is faculty also eligible to participate? Because I know that you're right.
You know, I'm not sure. The class of 2010 is putting on the event, and the window is beginning. But definitely, I think you should contact class of 2010. I think it's Cornell students, but I'm not sure.
Point of information.
A professor or faculty members could use class council money. It can only be for students.
Vice President Coombs.
Yeah, no, I just have some questions about, could you tell us a little bit more of the specifics on like the dining tickets, like how many and who have you been working with in the dining administration? It's like chair of the dining committee. I just wanted to get this straightened out.
Yeah, sure. So Cornell Dining is printing up the tickets in association with Athletics. So there'll be those kinds of tickets. And they're printing all the tickets for us. And we flipping her report will be purchasing some of those to be selling them on our website. And they're, you know, one ticket equals $1. So we're going to be selling them in bundle. We have to have a minimum of 5 tickets purchased.
Yeah, right. No, yeah, I just wanted to check on it. I know they had a ticket program last year, and I think they had 500, and then they ended up...
Yeah, they're going to be actual tickets, but like, they're the athletic tickets, basically.
Right.
There was something, obviously, it will say, like, flipping, saying, you know, on the front. So they'll be actual tickets, and I'll be able to be represented.
Are there any other questions or comments? Okay, thanks, Liz. All right, on to, or actually, I forgot to make one announcement. Next Monday, the University Diversity Council Working Group will be conducting a forum in the Alice Cookhouse from 7 p.m. to 9:30, and the main topic of discussion will be the recent controversy with the racially themed parties on campus. So if you guys are interested, I hope everybody can make it. That's in Alice Cookhouse next Monday from 7:30 to 9. Okay, next we have Cornell concert. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No,
oh, okay. I knew that. Next we have a Cornell concert commission presentation. Go ahead.
So I'm looking after for the end.
Most of them are somewhere, I think.
questions and comments? Vice President Boston.
I just wanted to reiterate to the assembly, kind of like what we did last week, the purpose of them coming to us is that they're certainly giving us a review of what they did over the past year, but also they're filling out a budget for the next 2 years right now. So if you guys have any cons or anything that you'd like to see, any different demographics or musical artists or ticket prices or just anything that you're particularly interested in asking them about, I think it would be really helpful for them to hear anything so that they can, you know, get any help in preparing their budget. So I wanted to sort of remind people of that.
Vice President Greenberg.
I'm just curious if in your original budget application to the student assembly, you stipulated that any extra money could potentially be passed on to Slope Day, only because, you know, Slope Day is its own byline funded group. They apply with their own budget. You have your own budget. I don't know that there are a lot of small organizations on campus that very well could benefit from having additional funding from the smaller musical acts.
Well, I think we always co-promote our, like, the smaller groups on campus, like, why we have such a large portion. I mean, $6,000 is a good amount of money, and we have the only organizations that have not been able to receive funding from us, or organizations who actually weren't eligible to receive funding from us and don't understand the full rules. But, so we've been able to keep that part of our budget, and we still have some left over from that part of our budget without a problem. So, like, we're not turning away smaller groups in favor of those days, nothing like that. It's, we did really well in our last couple of concerts. Got a lot of people excited, sold a lot of tickets, and ended up only subsidizing a smaller amount than we thought we were going to. So we ended up with a larger sum of money for our last concert than we normally do. Normally we book them more for a bigger concert, but since we have so much left over, we decided to help co-sponsor them.
So then why doesn't that go back into reduced ticket prices for the students as opposed to supplementing the budget that school they already applied for?
What we normally do to make up ticket prices is when we choose an artist, we like to estimate that ticket prices should, ticket income should cover the talent fee. So that's kind of how we kind of make our ticket pricing based on that, not based on the money that we have. So when we don't buy bigger bands, or we don't buy bigger bands, then we have the money for it. So ticket prices have not, for students, have not raised above $20 in the past, I guess, 3 years. So I think we're doing a job of reducing student prices when general public prices have gone up as much as $30.
Okay. But the savings that you save from year to year then go on to provide free concert for students the following fall.
Which is also in our, I guess, in our compensation, it says that we have to save as much to have at least one free show, which we have on the art spot for the freshman.
And one final question. Since you both are on Slope Day as well, did this additional money from you guys, from, well, I suppose, Cornell Concert Commission going on to Slope Day, did that translate to any reduced fees? Like, where did that money go? Where did it go in Slope Day?
It's
going
to be toward that third band.
Third band.
Yeah, just another note about the role of the money that we have and our co-sponsorship budget is we have the mandate of funding professional artists through whatever organization that comes to us. That means that we try to allocate a portion of our co-sponsorship budget to acts that will have the greatest exposure to Cornell students. So that means that we have smaller shows geared towards maybe a couple hundred, but for an event as big as Slope Day, it's geared towards the entire Cornell campus.
Vice President Slipman.
Yeah, I share Vice President Greenberg's concern. I'm not accusing anyone of unethical behavior, but, you know, when especially, and I think this is fine, you know, if you felt that the money should have been allocated to help Slope Day, then that's fine. But I think it's important to realize that from an outsider's view, the two of you are associated with both groups. Now, if we had another situation where Clap Councils was doing this, and Clap Councils wanted to give their, you know, a large portion of their budget to you guys, or to Slope Day, to get a bigger act, then I think we're running into some shady areas there. So I would recommend that you put something in your commission or the student assembly put something in our charter that would prohibit any exchange of funds between byline-funded organizations to prevent any kind of
embezzlement, if you will. So what are your thoughts on that?
Before I get to the pitch to Mike, I was just a little chance during the process. This wasn't sort of a collusion between the executive portion of the organization. It was a very bureaucratic process where we were approached by the school based program board if we would be interested in funding the GDP sponsored Brooklyn Act on the day of school day to get our organization more involved on the bill. Having said, we went through an entire voting process with our general body membership.
Sure, I completely agree, and I see no problems with that. But you know, when you say bureaucratic, and you know, your organization voted to give this money, and we gave them money to you with the stipulation that you would use it for your organization and nothing else. So I think in the future, and I don't think we should take any action now, but in the future, you should have. I think you should have come to us and said, "This is what we're doing with this $3,000. Is that okay?" Even an email to our vice president for finance or something like that would have been appropriate. But.
Representative Harvin.
I kind of wanted to get into like DJ's comment. For you kind of mentioned class councils and for co-sponsorship in general. When organizations go to other organizations, not only for money, they also go for help. And concert commission is great at putting on concerts. It's not just that. When you co-sponsor, you want their professional help, and they are amazing at putting on concerts themselves. The class campus has no expertise in that. And it creates working together between organizations. And just to give you an example, class council just put on World's Fair. That cost us about like $20,000. And the budget of class council doesn't have that much money. And to put, for an organization to put on that, we need to go to like organizations like Atlanta, another bi-funded organization, or go to you, maybe we put the ambassador came from Zambia. We had to go to CUPD to help us pay for that portion because we're incorporating so many things. And each organization is specializing in their own little thing. We're able to contribute all this money and put on a great event. Just like Slope is putting on their amazing event, and one of the things is a concert. They kind of go hand in hand. But the concert commission does specialize in the concert, and it's also why you've seen so many people in both boards too, because they, Slope Day does specialize in the concert in itself. So I think we shouldn't be running to like put a wall in the same organization co-sponsoring. Maybe you might want to look at if you have like a substantial amount of money going from one organization to another. Yes, but. We need co-sponsorship between organizations so we can put on these big events.
Representative Lennon.
Yeah, I think I kind of just wanted to reiterate what Representative Harmon was saying. CJ, I think you might have, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, the local income commission, but I think you might have interpreted a little wrong in the sense that it's not necessarily transferring of money from violent funded group to violent funded group, co-sponsoring. It's exactly that, it's co-sponsoring, sort of pulling the funds together in a very legally feasible way, you know, in our charter. And also just want to say, I think that's a very wise move on your part, and particularly reaction to the administration's concern in really boosting up the day of Slope Day, and specifically the concert, to sort of bring the attention more to the concert and less away from the drinking culture and all that. So I think all around, very productive and wise thing to be able to do.
Point of information, this has become almost a standard practice actually over the past few years. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the past 2 years this has been done either directly or indirectly. I know McSab calls one, right? So Liz, can you elaborate on that a little bit?
No,
Yeah, sure. McNabb contributed a substantial portion of money to the year that we had Snoop Dogg and Game, and we wouldn't have been able to put on that show without McNabb money. So this is kind of similar, except it's a lot less money here. And the thing about this is it's going to be on our posters, calling for permission to present the opening band to whoever they turn out to be. So promoting both organizations.
Just for those of you who don't recognize the name McFadd, McFadd actually received money from the Cornell Concert Commission. Representative, so.
Yeah, I mean, I have another concern. You guys are asking me to try to lay it down and find an organization to go to concerts Slow Day. But one thing I really like about the fact that you're directing that money to Slow Day, even if it goes to concert form, is that instead of, you know, Slow Day is already an extremely expensive but well appreciated event. Instead of having this great student activity fee to, you know, pay for this certain thing, you guys reinvested profit from shows, from entertainment from undergraduates, put it right back into the same thing, so you guys did a great job of that. I had a question that's sort of related to the interesting thing about McFadd being sponsored by Snoop Dogg. There's been an interesting discussion on campus of especially hip-hop artists not representing the diversity of interests of undergraduates. You know, most people don't listen to Snoop Dogg, right? What basically how has that sort of played a role in your selection of artists, especially hip hop artists, because this is this weird association with black folks like him only.
Okay, conveniently I'm actually the co-chairman of that. So the executive leader of Alana works with me, and we have this entity called MFAT, which basically joins Concert Commission and Alana. And the origination of this organization was that Alana felt that the minority artists at Concert Commission brought to Cornell weren't as a set reflective of the minority community or didn't appeal to them at the extent that the minority community actually used to boycott from the Concert Commission concerts for that very reason. So how McFadd, the dynamic works today is we will work with Milana in terms of the selection of artists. So what we do is really put the ball in their court, and we'll work together to find an artist that they deem is more reflective of their organization. And then Concert Commission on that
I guess my question wasn't so much in how McFadd works, but what your rubric is for, you know, the breadth of music genres and how you're choosing pop artists as far as, like, you know, is there something more on the Concert Commission side? Like, I guess you can tell which artists have been brought into your group with McFadd on.
The last McFadd concert I've ever on was the Lou Baby Jackson with the show, which was last December.
Okay.
And as I said, the selection process is a lot of negotiation. It is an Alana selective artist.
And just one last question. Does that mean necessarily that when a hip hop artist is funded, that McFadd money is almost always used, or is there a Concert Commission money that goes to hip hop artists?
No, that's not correct. The Concert Commission has bought a bunch of hip hop shows that didn't involve anything relevant to that. Off the top of my head, most of that comment was the previous hip hop show that came to Cornell, and that was completely Concert.
Does the CCC receive funding from the GPSA also?
Yes, we do. We actually get $75,000
for the GPSA. Okay. Does anyone else wish to speak for the first time? Okay, Vice President Boxer.
I just wanted to say, I mean, obviously I understand the relationship between all of these different groups. I think that you guys are doing a great job. I certainly am not suspicious of anything having to do with the Slow Day funding. I know it happens every year. But just to, I mean, this obviously is something to take into consideration perhaps. A lot of the people here are going to be listening to your budget again in the fall when you guys actually present it. So it might be something to take into consideration. I know we're not talking about like a couple of dollars that were transferred from Concert Commission to Slope Day. So, you know, you might want to think about at least including, like CJ suggested, maybe an email to the Vice President of Finance just to check on something like that. Obviously, this is a very high-profile event, and you guys are a high-profile group, so just to double-check on that, that might be just a creative way to just think of how to alleviate any concern with regard to this issue in the future, or if you guys can think of something else, I think it would be very helpful. I think that's sort of the sentiment that I'm getting.
Yeah, this will definitely be an emergency. I think it'll come back to the call for presentation. I think it'll be a lot clearer because you'll be able to see and track like how it works. Because we don't we don't make money. Obviously, we take some subsidize a certain portion. So you'll be able to see what we aim for and how much higher we come, how much more tickets that it would be. So that's why we have extra money. It's not that we're trying to cheat students. They don't make them pay higher prices. We make these guesses. Usually we're pretty on, but sometimes it's transactions or show unexpected things happen. Like the general public tickets sold more than student tickets. So we made more money for that show than we thought we were going to. So those things will be reflected in the budget graph. You guys will definitely be able to visualize it and don't just see it weird sounding.
And I just said one more thing. Related to line of money and our involvement in slow day. We, from a Cornell Concert Commission point of view, we see it as a sponsorship or as a co-venture in terms of this act of bringing. CBC was only given one bargain date this fall to work, as this term to work with, and we only have one concert. And we see slow day as another venue where we can put in another smaller act from our show.
Representative Hartman.
I just had a couple questions about McFadden. How do McFadden concerts do in relation, in comparison to concert commissions profit-wise?
Well, the way that the whole McFadden thing works is that we don't actually put money into a McFadden budget. Alana gets $7, and from that $7, $2 goes into the McFadden budget. So that money actually doesn't come out of Cornell Concert Commission's budget. You'll see it in our budget that I will send this fall, and you'll see how it went with
advisory board.
But it's actually not money that funds that show. They get about $25,000 in every semester, and generally those shows unexpectedly haven't done as well. We really expected the system like the after show to do a lot better than it did, so we spent or we subsidized more money for that show than we normally would have for a concert commission show. We've been working with Alana and Mulligan with Adam McFadden to think of ways that we can promote these concerts better to the general public and to students so that we can continue this organization in a good manner and actually get better looking for the show. We kind of wish that we had smaller venues because these types of shows in the past haven't brought the kind of attendance that shows like the All American Green Jackets have. But at this point, Barton's the only place you can go and sell it at Barton's is around 5,000 tickets. And that's kind of hard.
Representative Sandler.
Oh, I just want to comment and congratulate you on your choice of music. I think it does serve the broad breadth of students. And because you have a different background and does not have access, I enjoy the talk. For saying that all students of all enjoy music.
Are there any other questions or comments? All right, let's move on into the discussion on the Cornell Concert Commission constitution. So please, everyone, review that.
Well, can you present it? What the changes are?
And sure, present the changes. Good point. Oh, no problem. Take your time.
Organizations are out there, become involved in turning the sorority is that each candidate must have 2 semesters as a member of CCC as defined in the membership section that's before this. And as a clause kind of to alleviate problems, such as, you know, juniors coming in who, okay, they do know a lot, they haven't been involved in the organization for a while, but they know the academics of Cornell already, they know how to work the system. We wrote that the executive board, which is the executive steering committee, executive board screening committee who interviews everyone, here's the major question to the clause of certain eligible candidates. Kind of covering our basic concept.
Representative Rami.
Yeah, so you don't want freshmen to run because you say that they're not used to the campus after 3 or 4 months.
Well, we feel that we have had freshmen run every year, and it hasn't happened the way that they have been going to this. We haven't had a freshman go into this position in a while. But we feel that it would be more beneficial to them and to the organization to know that they're dedicated to this, because running a concert is a little bit more complicated than just showing up on the day of the show. There's a lot of background meetings we have to have. You have to work the show before. And these are things that we don't feel that freshmen who have been here for 3 months are capable of doing.
No, we are. I think we are.
Oh, I'm
sorry.
Have you ever put on a concert for 13,000 people?
No.
All right. Rami, it's Rami's time to speak. No, you're allowed to cut them off. It's rude, but you're allowed to.
I'm joining the elections. We realize that now. We should take executive positions and not extremely time consuming, which does require at least a couple shows of experience and, you know, just time in the organization. And that means that we hold our elections as early as November, which really doesn't give the freshmen of our organization the type of freshman experience that we would like to see in our executive board.
Do you think that, by being on it, there would be any experience for the future? Like, by being on it earlier?
I think by being in the organization for a full year, we'll poise them to become great executive members in their sophomore year, which is usually good.
And you said freshmen haven't been elected for a long time, but why shouldn't they at least try if they really want to?
I mean, the reason they haven't been elected is because those people will deem that they do not have the experience to fill these positions. So that's just a dynamic of the way it's worked out in the past. Very likely that freshman will, unlikely that they'll be elected to the executive board in the first place. So if we can somehow stress that in the constitution, showing that you require a certain level of expertise under the development of life, it would save our administration a lot of time during the election process.
Have you experienced like many instances where freshmen were elected and didn't like live up to par with their expectations?
To tell you the truth, at least the last
Speaker's time has expired.
Extend it by 30 seconds. Motion to extend by 30 seconds.
Extend the motion to extend in a second. Is there any defense? Okay, good. 30 seconds.
At least in recent history, I'd say going as far back as possible.
Yeah, we're
back. It's not a
election. Representative Ahmed.
I guess I actually have the same concern that Rami did. I feel like if you say that there haven't been any freshmen elected, then I think you I just don't see the point of this clause at all. If the system has been working on its own, sort of, I think giving this whole exceptions clause, so that, like the executive board may make exceptions, like while you guys seem extremely rejected, I'm really worried that this exception clause will be used in the future to sort of pick people or your friends to make exceptions for this and that. And I think that since like no freshman has been elected that has sort of caused any problems or anything, I feel like the system is working itself out, and I just don't feel there's any necessity to add this clause in there or to make this exception clause, because I'm just worried about that in the future. And I give you guys some of my time to, you know,
comment on that.
Sorry, my name is Melissa George, I'm the chair of the Berkeley Board. I was on the MCC executive board last term. I just want to say, while Richmond has never been elected, when they move, they're a lot less likely to stay with the organization. And this makes us lose members that could have been very beneficial if they didn't run in their sophomore year. But because they lost the election, they feel bad about it, and they're less likely to actually stay in the organization as a whole.
Well, do you think that had you not given them the power to run in the first place, would that have joined your organization anyways? Why don't they just wait till the sophomore year and get the exception? I mean, I just don't see that argument to me that, I mean, there's no offense, that argument would make any sense. Like, if they're not going to stay, they're not going to stay either way.
Well, I mean, for example, I ran in my freshman year and I didn't win, and I stuck with it, and I am on the executive board this year now. So the people that ran in the same year that I did, that were also freshmen, did not come back. And these are also people who were incredibly involved, and this happened to someone this year as well, who now has joined a fraternity and has not returned to a general body meeting. And these are people who want to be in an executive board of six people who run four concerts a year. So, I mean, I think this is a really important cause for us.
Sure. What about the
speaker's time has expired.
Is
there a motion to extend by how long?
How long are you up?
Denied that.
I'm going to move on. Representative Gay. Representative Levin. To stop at each point so you can ask questions for clarification, or we're going to the safe debate for after they've had a chance to explain each part. So, move on to the next challenge.
There's only one other change that's on here.
All right.
If you look under Section 2, Production Director, under the Operating Procedure section, the executive
order
is not really. The only thing that might have changed is, like, if I if it had said 8,
right.
Okay, so under the production director, part Q states shall assist in financial statements with the artist's accountant when necessary. And as our organization has changed, this is no longer the job of the production director, this is the job of the finance director.
Okay, boom. To open up the speakers list, if you were on the other speakers list, then you're still on. So, Parliamentarian Asgary.
Okay, cool. I have two questions for you guys. One of them is a semantic fix. And the other one is on page 5 of my copy, it says Article 8, Parliamentary Authorities. Article 8, Parliamentary Authorities. I was just curious when you say, I've never been to a meeting, so I don't know what this piece is. When it says she'll be governed by the consensus, I'm curious as to what that means, or if you guys actually run it via Robert's Rules of Order as like the ultimate backup after this doctrine, like we do. Because I'm just curious if that's the case, then I have a clause that we use in ours that would probably be appropriate for your document to have there as well.
Basically, this isn't too important a clause, but what it means is that throughout every meeting, we will come to a consensus on a decision as a majority. It's, I guess, a plurality vote on everything that we agree on.
Okay, because all the other things you guys have listed here, for example, amendments or anything else, run for parliamentary procedure for Robert's Rules, even some of them aren't plurality, like 2/3 votes, which is a super majority. So, I'm curious if maybe that would be something appropriate to add in. No. All I'm saying is to say something like all meetings of CCC and the local board should be governed by this document followed by Robert's Rules of Order. But we also have something in ours that says subject to revision in accordance with the EU that says over the subject to revision in accordance with the CCC. I can make amendments, so you guys can consider that showing up again. The other point is I was going to actually ask the chair to make this. Make this amendment as a semantics change. The first Article 1 says funded by the student assembly. The college should say funded by the student activity, funded by the student activity of the student assembly.
And GPSA also.
Student assembly, yeah. And GPSA, or the SA and the GPSA, just as so it's consistent because it's one student assembly. That's all.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So would anybody like to make that motion to amend it to reflect the change that Matt has just mentioned?
Shouldn't it go back to their commission? The commission?
Yep.
Which I mean it's a pretty trivial change. Would you guys have a problem with it? Okay. Okay. Would anybody like to make that motion?
Wait, is this the SA one?
Yeah, I think
okay. okay. Is there any dissent to that motion? Okay. Okay. So the change that's being made. Actually, well, that vote didn't count. I want to read this. The change that's being made. Actually, you read it because it was kind of like. Read it again. And I can write it. Yeah. Both issues.
So Article 1 will say the name of the organization should be the Cornell Concert Commission, herein referred to as the CCC. The CCC is the Virginia Students UCLS, funded by the Student Activity Student Assembly and Graduate Professional Student Assembly, or the GPSA.
Is
that the only change we've
seen? No one else has changed that.
Okay, so that was okay. You just explained that. Okay, so Representative Self, did you make that motion? Okay, and you seconded. Was there any dissent? All right, that was unanimously so amended. Okay, let me find the speakers.
Thank you, no one.
You're like eighth on the speakers list.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, I think the speakers list is actually emptied out. Okay.
Point of order,
Okay.
Yeah, Calvin was on.
All right. Yeah, unfortunately, the chair is not letting his speakers list. We will start a new speakers list.
I got it. All right. Calvin's first.
All right. VP Slickman?
Never mind. No. You want to speak right now.
Representative Self?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that because all these changes are fine. You know, I don't.
the student center, we are the parent organization for the Cornell Council Commission, but I think that I'd like to speak on how I interpret my role as a committee member approaching that responsibility. Exactly as Representative Lavin said, these are the people that are doing work on the front line, and I think for us to drag them across the dirt and sort of go on this with a red pen is a little obnoxious. I think that we should be here to see when there's a major change, when there's something that seems like really unfair or unethical. We're here to say, okay, you guys should rethink this. But I think that, you know, people are really interested in the semantic changes. Perhaps that should have led someone to go and meet with them before they brought this here today. But instead of doing it now with the motions and amendments and stuff. And one thing I want to say about the change in election procedure is that it's good because, you know, it's not only a first-year student thing. It's something that says that a junior or a senior who just randomly wants to start doing concert commission can't, you know, even if they have friends in our popular and are a senior and have this received Cornell experience, can't just be elected. So you're making a statement about experience in your commission.
Where are we? Representative Dina? Actually, I'm sorry, did you... Representative Hartman, did you speak?
No.
Okay, Representative Hartman.
What's your decision to make the election November instead of, like, April?
It's incredibly difficult for us to transition to executive members because of the expected things each executive member has to do. So for a production director, you have that entire next semester to transfer all of the knowledge that you would have. You know, like Liz is the outgoing production director, she's still here this semester to train our next production director who will then take it for the first semester next year. So it's kind of like a safety net for us, because
also, just on that note, a lot of work in terms of planning concerts for next year takes place during the summer, and that's why we need to create the executive board working on the summer rather than when I was just elected.
So, do seniors run for the executive position in November?
Seniors are not eligible.
If there is no dissent, I'm going to end debate. Is there any dissent?
Thank you.
You're dissenting?
Yeah, I'm on second.
Okay. Okay, moving on back to the speaker's list then. Representative Lavin, have you spoken yet?
Oh, I'm not.
Oh, you spoke already? Okay. Representative Fernandez? You guys can call the question after I call you. Representative Dina?
Second. Call for acclamation.
The previous question has been called. There's been a call for acclamation. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent?
Dissent.
Okay. All in favor of calling the previous question, please raise your hands. Hi. All opposed, please raise your hands. Okay, by a vote of 17-1, the previous question has been called. 18-1, I can't count. Okay, so CCC, do you have a final statement about the Constitution? Sure. Is there anybody from the community that wishes to speak on the CCC's Constitution? All right. Clerk, please call the roll.
Can you explain the vote, like, is yes vote for the Constitution?
Yeah, if you're voting yes, then you're voting to approve the Constitution. If you're voting no, then you're voting not to approve the Constitution.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
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 Hartman?
Yes.
Lavin?
Yes.
Sargent?
Yes.
Aiken?
No.
Arkin?
No.
Santana?
Yes.
Patel?
Yes.
Lindland?
Yes.
Did you miss Lennon?
Yes.
Anyone that did not vote? Okay, by a vote of 17 yeses to 2 noes, the Constitution is approved. Thank you for bearing with us. All right, on to unfinished business. First, we have Resolution 24, resolution regarding bulk emails by Vice President Coons and Vice President Wickham.
I motion to move Resolution 31 to the discussion.
All right, gentlemen, 10 minutes.
All right, it's been a blast to test today. Hopefully, by now, everybody's ample time to look over this, think about it from what we talked about it the last time. I think pretty well understood. See a basic summary, like CJN said before, basically. Lays out, clearly we have really no process, or somebody wants to send out a bulk email, we don't really know what to do, like DSA has no process for that. So this just kind of lays out exactly what it would do. It would go obviously to the communications committee, who would be obligated to meet when somebody wants to send this letter, without answering any concerns about timeliness. They'll have a couple days to look at it. The letter and the communications committee recommendation will go on minutes of the day of the next meeting. They'll have a little discussion about it, and whatever its ruling is, obviously the SA can choose to go with it or overturn it. And it's pretty straightforward. CJ, do you have any more? CJ, so we are welcome to your questions.
Speaker's list is now open. Parliamentarian Asgard.
Hey guys, quick question. Can you hear me now? Okay, good. I got it. Sitting on the communications committee, currently conducting the review of the charter, the question that I had is, at least when I first met with the charter review committee, what some of the members expressed was sort of a desire to sort of make the charter more concise, and I'm just looking at the lengthiness of this, not that that's a negative thing, just pointing that out. And I'm just curious as to what your decision process was to put it to the charter as opposed to something maybe in standing rules. Because, for example, your communications committee, because the vice president of public relations changes every year, then because of that, sometimes the communications committee might be more often, might be more active than other years, and so might, you know, warrant having sort of a review every year in the standing I'm just having to be one of those things that kind of ignores the time sort.
Sure, I have a very easy answer to that question. I originally brought it at the change of the standing rules, and the entire assembly voted to table it until amended that it would go into charter. So that was, I did that strictly because the assembly made it well known that they did not want it to go into standing rules. They wanted it to go into charter. I mean, I think it's pretty straightforward.
Okay.
So I feel like you've seen a lot of this resolution. My real question is, if we do go into the charter changes, and we do all the charter changes, how effective do you really think this is going to be? I mean, we know that Cornell students like to still leave math emails in university, like a student style, and I'm just curious if you think that people are really going to leave these emails.
Yes, we're not making any statement as to whether a bulk email is a good thing or a bad thing. It's kind of regardless of that, if somebody wants to send one, we have no, we have the power supposedly to do that, we just have no mechanism set up. But it makes no statement as to whether, I mean, the assembly could say exactly that, this is ridiculous, don't send it. It just kind of makes it an actual process.
Representative Self.
The frequency of a bulk email request, at least to my knowledge, I don't know how often it will come up, but why do you feel it necessary to have someone who wants that email submitted to the community, which has the VPNPR, and then the SA to look at the relationship of chat? Why do you think those two phases are important if you already have any board member who's in charge of the Assembly Public Relations supervising it?
Well, I think in the past year we haven't really had any instances where in my opinion, it's great to send out a bulk email. In the one case that there was sending emails, it was with Vincent's bus program. And I initially was very hesitant to pursue an
undergraduate students who are not in the student assembly can relate to and agree with,
right,
and then elect to represent.
But do you feel as though that should be an appeal process to the assembly instead of an automatic thing? Because, you know, if you look at our agenda today, we had so much already before, and every time we have bylaw funding, FAP appeals, everything else is shut down. So, I mean, do you really think it's perfect for every single one, in case that the VPSDR totally agrees with it, for us to drag it out of the assembly and spend 10 minutes talking about it?
Well, I think in the same case with the Vice President for Finance with SAFC appeals, the Vice President is, or his opinion, known, shares with the appropriations committee bill. And usually, if everyone is in agreement, there isn't much of a discussion and they just move on. So, if the Vice President for Public Relations and the Communications Committee agrees, then that opinion can be brought forward. I also think that it's saving the assembly some time, because if there are opinions that need to be addressed regarding a certain email, the Communications Committee can bring those opinions up, give a list to the Vice President of Public Relations, and that person can present those issues to the student assembly. The Communications Committee might be able to make recommendations and see why something's feasible or maybe it's not feasible, and present those ideas so that, you know, the student assembly can spend 45 minutes mulling around an article or something that's trivial.
Okay. Representative Fernandez.
Hi, I was just wondering, have we SI ever succeeded in like in actually setting out the volcano? You know?
I think this is, I might defer to Kwame Sarah to begin with. I know we set up both emails for voting and elections, but I don't know about any other.
Point of information, we're actually 0 for 0 in sending out bulk emails. So we've never tried. It's never happened.
Okay. Because the only thing that I feel like I'm so pushed is if you're going to create a charter and you're just relying on the fact that the Vice President will try to take steps to ensure the successful delivery. And, you know, I'm not sure if that's actually
going to
happen.
I think that with this charter amendment, if the Vice President of Public Relations request from a representative from the Communications Committee and the Student Assembly, I think it's pretty obnoxious for that person to refuse to pursue any type of communication. In my position as public relations, I put my personal viewpoints aside when I present things to the client.
No, I understand that. Like, I know that the Vice President would do that, but do you think that the actual administration would check out from, given the past tax track?
Right. I think one of the reasons they haven't passed is because it's been stuff, because people don't know really how to do it. But this would at least put a process in. And like I said, it doesn't make any assertions as to how good the chances would be, but it would at least have a process whereby the SA could try it. I think in the past it's been kind of a disorganized thing, like, hey, I want to send out this email. Well, we've never been successful in the past, so it just kind of dies. But this at least gives it some kind of this puts it in motion.
Representative Department.
I just had a question on the wording. It says an email which requires pre-approval from the Vice President for Student Academic Services or any other Cornell administrator. What emails require that?
Repeat the question, I'm sorry.
It says in the byline that you're trying to change, in your opinion, if any SA member who wishes to send an email in this part which requires pre-approval from the Vice President for Student Academic Services or any other Cornell administrator?
Point of information.
Why?
Point of information. VP Murphy would approve emails that go out to the entire undergraduate student body, and then there are corresponding administrators for the other constituencies. So, for example, I mean, I can't even think of who they are, but if you want to send something out to faculty, I don't know why we would, but there's somebody you would actually apply to or send that email to.
So could we cut down the wording and just say any SM member who wishes to send a bulk email must first submit a copy of the proposed email? Like, isn't this just really relying on a single bulk email?
I'm not sure if I speak for CJ Daniel, but I think the reason I like this is because it's really specific. Because I don't like this bulk email, or it leaves a lot of room for interpretation. This really sets up on this email to need pre-approval, etc.
Yeah, I think another great example of this is the bus program, where you sent the email out, not on the listserv, but a bulk email to, I think, every undergraduate, because you'd be in the actual CIT, I'm talking about this anymore. In the CIT, it says that if we break Cornell policy, then we'll be in trouble. But there, it just says it suggested that we go to Susan Murphy.
Vice President Sligley.
Can I call a question?
Second.
Okay. There's been a second. Is there any dissent? Okay, seeing none. You guys have. Okay, there is dissent. All in favor of calling the previous question, please raise your hand. All opposed, please raise your hand. A vote of 16 yeses to 1 no. The previous question has been called. You guys have 1 minute to make a closing statement.
Yeah, I think we've said everything we pretty much want to say. We just think this is very important for the future of public relations to ensure that effective, appropriate emails are being sent to Cornell students, and that there is a system of checks and balances for representatives to send an email, especially when the executive board member disagrees with that person. As you just said in my opening statement, I agree entirely.
Are there any members of the community that wish to comment on this matter? Okay, with that, clerk, please call the roll.
Daniel?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Harman. No.
Gladden. Yes.
Sergeant.
Yes.
Leonard. Yes.
Daniel. Yes.
Arfield. Yes.
Indiana. Yes.
Bell. Spain.
Did everyone vote? Okay, by a vote of 13 yeses to 4 noes to 2 abstentions, the resolution fails. Or 2/3 of the entire voting membership. Right? Is that correct? Okay, it requires 2/3 of the entire voting membership, which 13 is not 2/3, so the resolution fails. Not at this point, though. You could have changed it. You could have changed it at any point in time up to the last person votes for future notes. Okay. On to new business. Resolution 36. Resolution regarding JFAR.
No.
We have said about it for a week, but
no.
Quickly, the resolution. JFAR is the review committee, both for undergraduate financial aid policy, and working in conjunction with the Office of Financial Aid and Employment, but also reviews all applications for students helping students with emergency fund. Basically, the administrators, students, and the faculty that are on this committee all have been voting for the allocation of the fund. And obviously, this comes from the undergraduate students. So, the only folks that really should be counting the allocation of this money are undergraduate students. So, that's what the bylaw clarifies. We don't want to discourage administrators and, for example, Mr. Murphy votes and all of the, you know, we don't want to discourage any administration or faculty participation in it, so they're still going to do their suggestions, but undergraduates are the one of those that count for allocation of the fund. That's all that resolution is. And also just the attachment, this is something we have to approve, and it sort of looks like that. It's just sort of, while I was talking about your part, sort of an informal update, just a few things that the committee clarified on the bottom of the front sheet, what the role of the financial aid office is. One of the associate directors is in charge of making the application idea from the endowment is satisfactory enough for all the allocations. We still want to run the endowment for the long-term goal of having the emergency grant for things such as an apartment building on fire, and, you know, the emergency grant, and for a pool of funds that can give that will be awarded for summer internships, very similar to how the fellowships work. Just basically, I work in your office and get a lot of students that are not in fellowships, and I'm looking for funding for summer programs and internships, nonprofit, and they just don't, they can't find any funding. So that's what this would create, this would create. And in talking with the business manager, it seems like it's really useful to start in 2 years. So that's that. You'll get specific numbers at the end of the year about the endowment, but the endowment, I didn't really realize that they sort of kept that confidential, but not running them to give it. It should not be confidential or big at all. So it's pretty significant. Like, again, we did a payout of over $40,000 in a year in the endowment, which is great. So that's just an update for everyone.
Thanks a lot for getting this together, Ryan. I have one question. Do you have any idea how much money came in from that student survey that was sent out where students had the option to give $1 to SHS? Do you guys have any idea how much money was donated? For the student survey, students had the option of giving $1 to one of three.
I'm assuming they'll do that when the business manager and then the director of the team. But I have to.
Representative Gay.
No more questions. Anyone who's occurred, is Justin still current contact?
Yes, but because she's leaving for next year, she's sort of training another counselor who I'm working with too, but still present.
Who's the associate director or one of the regular counselors?
She's a regular counselor now. That's basically the discretion of the office, so I guess.
And what is their opinion?
Well, yeah, I talked to them and basically, when I said this, I mean, logistically, this is what it has to be, and then this is without charter. She was, of course, concerned that faculty administrators would then be deterred from giving a suggestion to being part of the committee, but that's why they're still going to vote, they're still going to give their instant recommendation, but for the sake of allocation, to vote for the Democrats. But yeah, they're excited to have that down with the Jeff
Representative Duke.
I just have a question. In terms of the undergraduate team members being the only ones with voting rights, how does it work in terms of seeing like financial aid and knowing if the student is receiving financial aid? Does that come into play at all?
Yeah, good question actually. That does come into play. When they give us the application for the request, they have basically they will say, for example, someone's requesting $500 for they had to be transported via ambulance. Their insurance covers some of it, but the applicant amount is $500. They will say they're from a low need family. There's like, I guess, three brackets they put. They'll say they're low need income, and they also say students has no other means to pay for it. And they come up with that by using what they have in Ohio, using the information they have in Ohio for their financial aid package. So their tax return, their parents, FAFSA, they use that information to determine what kind of thing they are.
Okay, cool. And then my last question to you, why not include faculty members? Can we not do that with the charter? Or is there a reason why just undergraduates are going to vote and you're not choosing the independent?
Well, because the money came from the undergraduate student at UCC. So with our charter, yeah, we have a whole lot of time for that.
Problems
I motion to adjourn.
Second.
It's been a motion to adjourn and a second. Is there any dissent?
Dissent.
There's been dissent. Do you rescind that motion to let them finish what they're saying?
Right.
Okay. There's been a motion to adjourn and a second to say dissent. There's no seeing none. This meeting is adjourned.
I have to get this fast. I'm going to go to the next one.
What? You, oh, that's sweet. I love you, dear.
Oh, really?
I'm looking at pretty good. Okay, well, I appreciate that. Thank you. I appreciate your brushes with death and my honor. Were you home for half of it?
You did a pretty good picture. I love it. Oh, it's like what we're doing is to protect the right of individual.
How it's doing.
I'm gonna reserve the patience in the regular call. Should be fine. Did you ever actually see the doll? Because I don't think you were there right now.
I just saw it from the box.
Oh, yeah?
Somebody pinch me.
I'll
get that in a minute.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.